Page 114A. 114A. Okay. All right, here we go. A lot of us just got back from Diamond Mountain University, which is 2 hours outside of Tucson. And we did the first 3 days of the program there. And we had a hard year there this year. We had a tragedy happen with a student. And, you know, it was a difficult year for everybody. But some kind of, what do you call that when everyone cries and it comes out okay? Catharsis. Yeah, it was like a big catharsis in the last 3 days. And we all had a really intense time. And we asked the retreatants to come out and speak. They're not supposed to see anybody. So they came out blindfolded. And, you know, we led them into the temple there. And they got up and they gave talks. And it was really awesome. It was really beautiful. So 5 of the retreatants gave talks, and then 5 of the graduates from there who've been working in other parts of the world gave talks, and it was really awesome. Somehow it was exhausting. I don't know. We were all crying and having love fest and missing each other, and it was really, really beautiful. And Alejandro gave a great talk. And the retreatants asked me if there was another Alejandro who came to Diamond Mountain. Because he's been doing so awesome stuff, you know. And they were just, they couldn't believe that you were there, you know. They couldn't believe it. They couldn't believe what you were doing, you know. And it was really beautiful. They were really freaked out what he's been doing. He, like, just organized... He organized one talk where 1,000 people came in Guadalajara. And then recently a theater piece with a Dharma teaching and flamenco and modern dance and theater. And 800 people came to that. And Ayrton organized... we also had a sale of Huichol art there, and an art show. And it was just awesome. And they've been teaching the courses there in Guadalajara, and they have one of the strongest groups in the world. So that was very moving for the retreatants to hear about that and to see that. And they were really happy. And then Mercedes got up and gave one of the best talks I've ever heard. And I was really happy and impressed and, I don't know, grateful. It was a very, very beautiful and moving talk. But we cried, we all cried so much that we're exhausted today. Then I had to get up at 5 o'clock and work with the retreatants. Some of them are in deep, deep retreat, so some of them haven't been out for a year or more. And then I have to go meet with them, and one of them is translating all these materials into Hebrew for Israel, and now she has 45 groups, ACI groups in Israel, are studying. 45 groups are studying there. About 800 people came to the last talk there, and we started with 10 people in a yoga studio. So she's doing awesome. I spent the morning with, last night at midnight, I spent with them, the two Israelis, and then this morning with the Stumps, and they're in deep, deep, they're doing great. David is translating Tibetan. He's working on 2 Tara sadhanas. He's into Tara practice, and he's working. So we worked this morning together on a sadhana of Tara, about Tara, and he's doing really well. And Susan's doing really well. And then we had a big yoga class with all of them. And then we did Sechu, and then we had an ordination. And there's like a virus, a non-virus going on around there. So there's a lot of, it's going to be a little weird, I think, when you meet them all. Your old friends, they look pretty cool now. But there's a lot of nuns. And so today we made a full nun. We ordained a full nun. Then we scheduled it for 45 minutes, and it took 4 hours. And we just got here. We just drove up. So I'm a little zonked out, but we're happy. And it was just very, very beautiful. And I don't know. They're really in a good place, and their practice is awesome. We did like an hour of meditation together this morning, and it's just awesome. It's really extremely beautiful what's going on in there and the feeling in there. And it makes me want to go, you know. So I think we're going to have a big demand, I think. They get out in a year, less than a year now. And then we can all go and do shorter retreats, you know, like 3 days instead of 3 years. And, you know, we can have some night. There are beautiful cabins, and they're all going to be available in April of 2014. So then I think we should go and do some nice retreats there. And it's very, very beautiful, beautiful place. And it's quiet. It's really, really quiet and beautiful. So anyway, we're just all like on another bliss level right now. So, all right. And it was a great relief to see them all so happy. And nobody, you know, everyone's just totally happy and doing really good practice, hard practice. Okay, so we're going to continue with a book, just a short introduction. This is called Lamrim. It's a kind of spiritual literature in Tibet. It means Idiot's Guide to Enlightenment. Somebody asked me to do a program at Shivananda, and I said, I'd want to do Idiot's Guide to Enlightenment. And they changed it. They changed it to Nirvana or something. You know, they didn't ask me. They just changed it. But that's the name of the book. It's like Enlightenment from A to Z. So you take about 4,000, you know, scriptures, and you suck out their essence, and you present it in an A to Z presentation of enlightenment. So any normal person can start on the first page, and if they practice each step that's presented, then by the last page they're a Buddha, which is a pretty wild claim, right? If you just make your way through this book and do some meditations, then by the time you get to the last page, you're a Buddha, you know? According to Buddhism, all of us will become a Buddha. Male, female, young, old, wherever you live, doesn't matter. Everyone has the capacity to become a Buddha, and everybody will become a Buddha. It's just a matter of time. This book will speed it up a little bit. I was fortunate enough to hear this teaching from my teacher over 25 years. And he drilled it into us. And then I thought that I should pass it on in my lifetime. I should make time to pass it on, you know. So I'm doing that. And I'm doing it, what do you call it? In a leisurely way, okay? I'm not rushing. And I'm not watering it down. This is my one chance in the year. 4 times a year I have a chance to present hardcore Buddhist teachings. And so I'm gonna, and I don't care how confused you look, okay? If you want something more general, come to one of our other talks, okay? But this is for the serious people. It's not difficult. It's joyful. It's beautiful. But it's deep, you know? It's deep. So it takes some, you know, you have to focus and you have to learn it. But it's very beautiful. It's very beautiful. So I'm going to go through each word of the Tibetan, partly to impress you. Maybe mostly to impress you. No. Partly because I would like a record of these teachings available for future generations. Because I was fortunate enough to catch a lama right out of Tibet. When Tibet fell, my lama came out of Tibet, one of the greatest lamas of Tibet. And then I was a stupid hippie 22-year-old And I ran into him and then lived with him for 25 years. And so I got a very fresh, unique chance. You know, I wasn't working for the first 8 years. And I was able to just study all day with him. And then after that, there weren't any more lamas like that. The last one, the last Geshe from Tibet passed away in our monastery last week. So that was just a unique period of time. I was in the right, Dr. John, right? I must have been the right place. It must have been the right time. And so I want to record what I learned, and I don't want it to be lost. So Rebecca and Gunnar have taken responsibility, and I think Jigme's running a backup. But we must record everything. We cannot lose any of it, okay? Even if it's not video, at least audio. Because no one will ever get this kind of explanation again. I called a monastery in Tibet recently because I was looking for some books. I just got their phone number and called them, you know, which is weird, right? And I said, in Tibetan, I said, you know, I want to talk to somebody about getting this book. And they're all like, they couldn't understand me. And they forgot Tibetan, you know. And they said, wait, wait, there's one old monk who speaks Tibetan, you know. And I thought that was so sad, you know. That's like calling Harvard University and there's only one guy left who speaks English, you know. And it was really sad for me. And so that generation is gone. And those times are gone. And at least we should record it for the future. Well, they need money for more cameras. If you have $1 zillion and you want to unload some of it, raise your hand. I'm not trying to make money. We do these things for free. We lose steadily healthy amounts of money. And we just scrape by and we scrape it together and we do it. But this should be recorded properly and it should not be lost. Because that's it, you know. And I think it's the greatest book about enlightenment ever written. This particular book, I think it's the greatest book ever written. So to have a foreigner, an American, ex-Phoenix hippie, to explain it in plain English, straight from one of the greatest lamas of Tibet, it'll never happen again, you know. So we should record it. And you should come, okay? Don't be lazy. You will never get a chance like this. And this won't last forever, you know. I kept telling people at Diamond Mountain during the courses there, this ain't going to last forever. And they're all like, yeah, yeah, Geshe-la. Now they're all like, wah, it's over, you know. And all things pass, right? So you should come and you should learn. Even to come and sit here and not study and not practice, it's still a great blessing for your mind, okay? And you shouldn't miss it. And it's good, what do you call that? It's online, right? Streaming online. And that's good. If you can't get here, that's good. But human to human is irreplaceable. According to Buddhism, there's a magic that happens between living humans. So try to get here as much as you can while it's live. Because this particular detail and my training in it is not going to happen again. And not because of me, but because of my teacher. So it would be a shame if you lose that opportunity. You know, it's not like anything else you can get, I don't think, in the Western world right now. So try to come. Even if you don't feel well or you're very busy or it costs money or it's trouble to come, try to come, okay? It's not for me, you know? I will teach. If one person comes, I'll teach. If nobody comes, I'll probably still teach. Okay, so it's okay. I'm determined, you know? I'm used to that. But from your side, you shouldn't lose the chance because it may not happen again, okay? And the whole process will take, I think, another 10 years at least. So, you know, don't get nervous. Just come and enjoy and sit there and, you know, get what you can get, you know. And it'll be going for a while. All right. So we were describing how to prepare for a meditation. And there are 7 traditional steps for getting yourself ready for a meditation. It's very similar to warming up your legs before you run an important race, okay? And if you don't warm up your brain before you do meditation, then according to Tibetan belief in this tradition, you won't have a good meditation. It's not possible to have a truly deep meditation unless you know the proper warm-up. Who invented the warm-up in the Three Heaps of Sutra? The sutra is a clue. Yeah, the Buddha, okay. Sutra means a book taught by the Buddha, right? Okay. So Lord Buddha taught the seven steps. It's not something even that Tibetans made up. It was from Lord Buddha. And we talked about the sutra at Diamond Mountain. We looked at it. Okay. So we're in the, what is it? We're in the section about that which is called clearing your conscience before a meditation. Make your conscience clear before a meditation. If you have hurt someone recently, or even a long time ago, and it's still on your conscience, and you didn't apologize, and you didn't face up to it, and you didn't purify it from your heart, it will subtly block your meditation. You won't be able to have as deep meditation as you could. And, you know, you meet people, I mean, 99% of people could care less about meditation. They're interested in videos and TV shows. And I went to a friend of mine's house. I don't have a TV. I haven't never had a TV. And I went to his house. He lives in Tucson. And he had his TV going, you know. And I'm like, I wonder what TV's like, you know. I haven't seen one for 20 years or something. And he was entranced in a game show, you know. And I was watching him, not the TV. And then he was like, wow, check this out. And they have a lady blindfolded. And she's reaching into a bucket full of something. And she has to guess what it is. And it was cow penises cut off of cows. And he was so turned on. He was like, check that out, man. And I'm like, how can you spend your life, you know, watching a blindfolded lady reaching into a bucket of this thing? You know, what a terrible tragedy. What a terrible waste of your time. I can't imagine a worse waste of your time. It's hard to imagine a worse waste of your time. A worse waste of your time. And so very few people care about meditation. They come home, they eat, they watch TV. They do some Facebook, and then they get old and they die, and life is finished. So some people try to meditate, but they don't have training, or they don't have a correct... It's like learning to play piano. They learn chopsticks, and they never get past that. And you meet them, and they play chopsticks for you, and you're like, yeah, you played that for me a few years back. You know, and, you know, meditation is a beautiful art. If you learn it with a good teacher, they can teach you many ways to meditate. And they're very beautiful ways to spend your time. And you go deep, deep inside and you make huge progress and beautiful things happen to you. Okay? But you need training. You need proper warm-up. So one of the warm-ups is confession or admitting your mistakes that you've hurt people. So that's a tradition. Is it hot in here, Rebecca? Is it hot? How many people feel too warm? Yeah, let's freeze them. They pay a better attention. If you make them hot, they fall asleep. If you make them cold, they hate it, but they stay awake. Okay, Alejandro's like, yeah, okay, we'll do that. So he's been describing a process of clearing your conscience before you meditate. And in Buddhist practice, there are names of Buddhas, past Buddhas, that we can chant before we meditate. And we finished that at Diamond Mountain. We talked about the 35 Buddhas whose names you can recite. And then that will clear your conscience, okay? So I'm just going to go a little bit more on that. It's a little confusing. I'm sorry. I'm not skipping anything to make it easier. We're going straight through. And then we get to a more friendly part, okay? So don't worry. Deshen Shekpa Songe, you good? Deshen Shekpa? Go down. Yeah, okay. There you go. There you go. Okay. First line there. Dewar Shekpa Che Dunki Tsen Nena. Deshen Shekpa Songe Tengdu, on top of the 35 Buddhas. Dewar Shekpa Che Dun. Che means brothers of the same family, or brothers and sisters of the same family, is called Che. Okay. There's a famous Kuche from ancient India. Who's that? The two. Asanga and Vasubandhu. Okay, they're called the two brothers. Kuche. Holy body brothers from the same body. Same mother, not the same fathers. And they were called the Kuche Nyi, the two brothers. Here we have Che Nga. What's that? Sorry, Che Dun. The seven brothers, okay? The seven brothers, okay? Che Dunki, Che Nena. If we add those seven names to what? The 35 that we had already. Temba did to Nyingmar. Here in the Nyingma. Do you know Nyingma? Nyingma. If you fix a good cup of Tibetan tea, you pour black tea into a cup, and then you just add hot water. And then Tibetans are really good at sipping around the tea. What do you call those things? Tea leaves. They sip around the tea leaves, and then they set the cup down, and it's just tea leaves left, you know. When you set the cup down and there's all that junk in the bottom, that's called nyingma. Okay? Nyingma means the crap at the bottom of the cup. And these times in history are called nyingma. Our time, the present time, is called nyingma. In the history of mankind, we are in the nyingma. We are in the times when people will spend the precious hours of their life watching a blindfolded lady pull bull penises out of a bucket. Okay? That's due nyingma. These are bad times in the world. These are sick times in the world. Okay? Due nyingma. Temba did due nyingma munnam nam duparsung. Here in the days of the dark, if you add the seven Buddhas' names to the 35, when you sing your bad deeds, okay, then your munlams will droop, even in these bad times. What's a munlam? Your prayers will droop, means come true, siddha. They will come true, okay? So if you add the seven names, your prayers will come true, okay? He doesn't give you the seven names, so I went and got them for you, okay? I'll try to put them on a piece of paper. I owe some other things to you, a couple of mantras, right? I'll try to do it tomorrow sometime. But I'm going to give you the seven names, okay? Where did I get them? There's a lama named Ngochu Dharmabhadra, okay, Quicksilver, who wrote a nice commentary on them, a nice explanation of them. Is the air conditioning going? You got it? Okay. It'll come. It's broken? Okay. That's why they turned the lights on me. Okay. He lived 1772 to 1851. He was born around the time of the American Revolution in Tibet. Okay. And here's his version of the seven. There are two versions of the seven. In all the versions, they say there's an eighth. So actually, I'm going to give you eight names. Okay. But there's two versions of the seven. There's always the same eight. So here we go. The first one is called Menla. Menla, okay? What's that mean? Medicine. Yeah, medicine Buddha. It actually means medicine lama. Menla. It doesn't, they never call him medicine Buddha in Tibetan. I think that's some American thing. But it's a Buddha. It is a Buddha. And if you have a medical problem and you recite their name, it can help your medical problem, okay? That's called Menla. These seven Buddhas 8 really are very useful for people who have a serious medical problem, because you can recite these 7 names or 8 names and it will help your medical problem. The first one is called Menla. I think it would probably be more powerful to recite their original names in Sanskrit, okay? So I'll give you that. Menla is Baishajya. I'll give you a piece of paper tomorrow, so don't stress. Baishajya Guru. Okay, Guru means teacher, right? Medicine Lama. Baishajya Guru. Okay? That's the first of the 7 brothers, right? Buddha brothers. It's like the Blues Brothers. Okay, number 2. Ngunken Gyalpo. Abhijnana Raja. It means king of total knowledge. King of total knowledge. It's not bad to recite their names in English also if you want. Okay. And I'll give you tomorrow, I'll give you a piece of paper with the right spelling. Okay. Number 3, Chodak Gyatso Young. Dharma Kirti Sarga Kosha. Dharma Kirti means the fame of the Dharma. And Sagara means ocean, and Gosha means the song of the ocean. The sound, the beautiful sound of the ocean at night is the name of that Buddha. Okay, that's number 3. Number 4, I'll also give you, if you're interested, I'll give you the what they look like, okay, if you want to picture them. Okay. Nyangen Me Chokpel, Ashoka Tamashri. And I'll give you tomorrow a piece of paper. Don't stress, okay? Nyangen Me means no more sadness. And in Sanskrit, that's... No, in Sanskrit... Ashoka. The name Ashoka means no more sadness, okay? Nyangen Me Depa means nirvana. Nyangen Mepa means no more sadness. So the famous King Ashoka, his name means no more sadness, okay? And there's a long story, and I can tell you about the Sanskrit, but you'll fall asleep. Okay, Shri means shining. So his shine is shining highest freedom from sadness. Shining highest freedom from sadness. What's the word in Spanish for dry?
Seco.
Seco, good. Yeah. In Russian, it's suhor. In Russian, it's suhor. It's a sukh. It's some kind of sukh root or sakh root. We have desiccated in English. So sakh comes in from Sanskrit, shuk. And in ashuk means no more dry. Why dry? You cried too much. So no more sadness means no more dryness. Ashuk or ashuk. So same. Fifth one, right? Sarsang Chime, Suvarna Badra Vimala. Suvarna Badra Vimala. Suvarna means good color. Varnish comes from that, okay? Suvarna. And Badra, you know from Virabhadrasana in yoga, right? Badra means good or excellent, okay? Virabhadra means the pose of the excellent warrior, okay? Virabhadrasana, which yoga teachers in America say Virabhadrasana, which means something like I lost my tea. Anyway, Suvarna Bhadra. Vimala means free of all stain, immaculate, okay? So that Buddha's name, that medicine Buddha family brother's name is Immaculate Buddha of Purest Gold. Okay, Immaculate Buddha of Purest Gold. Next Buddha, number 6. Dayang Gyalpo is a Svara Ghosha Raja. Svara Ghosha Raja. Svara means a holy sound. Ghosha means a throat. Or song. And Raja means king, right? So it's the king of a song of sound. Okay? The 7th one, his name is Senlek Yongdrak Pel, which in Tibetan, in Sanskrit, is Supari Kirti Kirtitan Supari Kirtitana Namashri. Okay. Holy shining name sung to the skies. Holy shining name sung to the skies is the name of that Buddha. And I'll give you a list, okay? Don't stress. There's an eighth medicine Buddha, which you can add, okay? He mentions seven, but there's a boss, okay? Boss of the medicine Buddhas. And that one's name is Menbe Gyalpo. Menbe Gyalpo, which is Vaidyaraja, Vaidyaraja. Vaidya means the science of medicine in India. Raja means king, okay? So you can call him king of healing, king of healing. What's another name for medicine in Sanskrit? The science of medicine. Ayurveda, Ayurveda. So Ayus means life. Veda means the knowledge of something. Video comes from that, to see. And Ayus means life. Before a V, an S must change to R in the rules of Sanskrit. So it becomes Ayurveda, okay? So those are the eight medicine Buddhas, okay? Seven plus the boss, all right? So you got a bonus Buddha tonight. You were only supposed to get seven and you got eight. Some people list Menla as the extra, as the boss, okay? The first one I gave you. Some people say that's the boss, okay? So there's two different versions. Rangchak Penyun Danjinlap Nyuwa Dundu Nyerwe. If you're hoping that your spiritual practice will be of more effective for you, and if you are hoping to get blessings which are faster, right? Why? Dershta Dershta Janma Vedaniya. What is that? Where does that come from? Yoga Sutra, right? Dershta Dershta Janma Vedaniya means you can do nice things to other people and stuff will come back to you like a boomerang. Dershta or adershta? Seen in this life or not seen in this life? Meaning you might have to wait 10 lifetimes, okay? Then how do you change him from adershta to dershta? You have to sing the names of Buddhas and stuff like that, okay? So he's just saying, if you want to speed things up a bit, you know, like, I don't know. I teach business people how to use karma to increase their income, and they do. Because they do it quickly. They make it come faster. If you're interested in your karmas ripening more quickly, I suggest that you recite the names of these seven Buddhas also. Chukte means stick them onto the end of the other 35. You know, add them. Append them. Chuk. And then chak. What's chak mean? Yeah, then bow down to all 43, okay, 42, all right. It sounds complicated, but don't stress, okay? I'll give you a list. You can, when you're bored and you're in traffic, you can pull it out. And I like big traffic jams because I get to do so much practice. So that proves that traffic jams are empty. Okay. I enjoy traffic jams. I enjoy flight delays. I love them. Oh, you're going to be stuck in Newark Airport for an extra 6 hours. Great. I can do extra yoga today and translate some books, you know, like that. It's useful. Tungshaki Deshin Shepa Shepa Mangma Dole. So those of you who got the 35 Buddhas page recitation. Anybody have a copy? Can you just... Yeah, thank you. This I handed out yesterday, I think, or the day before at Diamond Mountain. These are the 35 Buddhas. I'll get some more printed. If you have made a mistake in your life, if you really hurt someone by accident, right? I mean, it happens, right? I had a woman come to me. She's just a normal person, but she looks old, you know. And I said, you know, there's something going on in her life. I didn't know what it was. And then one night she told me, she was just driving down the street and a man stepped in front of her car and she killed him. And it wasn't her fault, right? But it changed her life. Her whole life changed, and it ruined her whole life. And she got very old very quickly. And there's a way in Buddhism, if you've made a big mistake of some kind, you hurt somebody really bad. Usually it's by accident, right? I mean, you're kind of angry and you do something and then suddenly they fall down and something bad is happening. And you can clean it, okay? You can clean it. And this is one way. You can recite these 35 Buddha's names, okay? So I'm just going to give you an example of two or three of them. Because he talks about it. He's going to talk about it. Here's the first three of the 35 Buddhas. I bow down to the Buddha, Nageshvara Raja, Lord and King of the Nagas. If you want to skip the Sanskrit name, I don't care. And I don't think they would care. Okay? They know all things. You could say their name in Eskimo, and they would be fine with that. They would know that you're calling them, okay? So if you don't want to deal with the Sanskrit, I don't care. And I doubt that they care. But it makes you look cool. Nageshvara Raja, Lord and King of the Nagas, who has gone that way, okay? The Buddha who has gone that way. And then you say their name. I bow down to the Buddha Shakyamuni, able one of the Shakya clan, who has gone that way. That's the name of our own Buddha in this world. I bow down to the Buddha Vajragarbha Pamardi, the Buddha who uses the heart of diamond for total destruction, who has gone that way. And then you recite the rest, okay? And you think about the big mistake you made when you were 16. Between 16 and 19 seems to be a prime time for this kind of thing, okay? You can clean those things. And if you recite these Buddha's names and you clean them, you will feel different and you will feel younger and your body also will change. It's very strange. It's a burden that's been on you and you didn't know until you clean it. And it's like somebody took a big 80-pound backpack off of you and suddenly you're walking around like, I feel 10 years younger, you know? And it's like that if you clean them. Okay? Sing the 35 Buddha's names. Throw in the 8 Buddhas. If you wanted to work a little faster. Okay? But now he's going to say, look, Tungshaki Deshin Shepa Shepa Mangwa, why do they keep repeating who has gone that way? They say the Buddha, who has gone that way. Why don't they just say 35 guys' names and get it over with? You know? Why do you have to keep saying the Buddha so-and-so, who has gone that way? Why do you keep reciting the Buddha who has gone that way? Deshin Shepa Shepa Mangwa. Dole Ngusu Ming Jung. Dole Ngusu Ming Jung. That is not the exact wording of the sutra itself, okay? The sutra only has it once in the first Buddha's name. It doesn't repeat the Buddha who has gone that way, okay? So then our author, who was the teacher of the teacher of the current Dalai Lama, and who was the teacher of my teacher, teacher's teacher, okay? So he's your great-grandfather, all right? And he's the Dalai Lama's grandfather, okay? We are the same lineage, teachers. Why do they give these extra words for each Buddha if they don't occur in the sutra except for the first Buddha? Yang, Tepa mepa tsen jemba dumba mirung. It's improper in Buddhism to refer to your teacher lightly. You don't say Mike, okay? Or you don't say Robbie. You know, if your teacher is Rob Haggerty, you don't say, hey, Robbie, okay? In Buddhism, it's considered, mirungwa means improper. It's not proper. It'd be like meeting Barack Obama and saying, hey, dude, you know? I mean, you can say that, and I don't think he will mind. And we don't live in a country where they will lock you out for the rest of your life. And there are countries where they will. Should I mention? No. I've been to a country like that. It's you can get locked up for years for referring to the king lightly. It's a modern country. Noblesse oblige, something like that. It's a law. But in Buddhism, you don't say your teacher's name lightly. Okay? You don't ever make light of your teacher's name. Okay? I had a student who referred to my teacher in a taunting way, and I told him, you can't come back for a year. If you're curious why that particular person wasn't allowed to come to class for a year, it was a single word in reference to my teacher's name. So in Buddhism, that's an extremely serious thing. Okay. Shepa mangwa doles ngusumin jungyang tupa mepa. Sen jemba means there. Jemba means naked, unadorned. Okay, like you don't go to work in your underwear, and you don't say your lama's name without some fancy stuff on it. Okay, same thing. All right. Jemba dumba mirunwa. It would be in wrong. Jay chaksil tar. We are following the custom of the teacher of His Holiness the First Dalai Lama, which is Jatsun Kampa. Sangme Ur, at the beginning of each Lama's name, each Buddha's name, we therefore say the Buddha who has gone that way. In English, because of English word order, syntax, we put it in between the Buddha Shakyamuni who has gone that way. Okay. But we are following the tradition of the Dalai Lama's lineage that we don't refer to high beings with lightly. We did an ordination today. We ordained a nun. It was supposed to take 45 minutes. It took 4 hours. She was a hard one. Wasn't she? Phil was there. It was beautiful. It was a stunning ceremony. I always cry and I just think, oh, okay, I'll be late to Phoenix. Let's just sit here and enjoy this person becoming a nun, you know. It's so beautiful. In Buddhism, the ceremony is very beautiful. But in the ceremony, you're supposed to call on your teacher for help. And then in the ceremony it says, whose name I say only in great need, means I'm not even worthy to say my teacher's name out loud. I shouldn't say my teacher's name even out loud, except that it's an important ceremony. I want them to come. Okay, I will say their name. But in this ceremony for making a new nun, you call on your teacher and then you say, I'm sorry to use your name so boldly, but I need you to come. You see? And then it just shows how you feel about your teacher. Okay. And I'm not talking about Geshe Michael, you know? You have your own. Everyone will connect with their heart teacher. But when you find your heart teacher, pay them respect and never refer to them lightly. Okay? That's just a Buddhist tradition. Okay. Sama udeshin shepe chetu chetu dijargo. Chetu means, che means big. Du means praise. So you have to stick some big shot words on their name. You don't say, hi, Mike. If your teacher is Geshe Michael, you don't say, hi, Mike. You say, you know, respected Geshe La or something like that. La means respected. So Geshe La is just a nice way to say it. Or if Nick is your teacher, you don't say, hey, Nick. You say, oh, teacher Nick. I love it when we're in China. They refer to all the DCI teachers as, what's the Chinese name for teacher? Sifu. Yeah, they say Sifu Mercedes, or they say Sifu. They never say Mercedes, and they never say, you know, Jigme or something. They always go Sifu. You know, they give you a title, they're calling you, oh, honorable Mercedes, you know, and they never say anything less than that. And I like it. It's very, to me, it's very elegant and intelligent. Is that the right word? There's another word, right? Laoshi, Laoshi, Laoshi. They say Laoshi, and it means respected teacher. But they will not call even a foreigner from America who's called Nagu Chembo in parts of China. Those big noses, right? To us, their noses look small. To them, our noses look like Pinocchio. And they're like, but they never say anything like that. They say Lao She. You know, even an American who shows up, a big, clumsy American, demanding, clumsy American, they will say, Lause, Lause, you know, and I like it. It's elegant. It's classy. Okay? And it's good karma. Okay? Shechati jargo. Jargo means you must apply extra words to your teacher's name to show respect. That's also a tantric vow. It's a tantric commitment. Once you enter the higher teachings, secret teachings, it becomes a high commitment. Which if it, that means if you do it properly, you can become a Buddha in this life. So that can be a cause of becoming enlightened in this life. And it's a commitment in the higher teachings, okay, to refer to your teacher with respectful additional words, okay, of respect. Okay, Deichi, my computer just freaked out. Hang on. Deje chishak tabutene. After that, if you would like, you can do chishak. I'm not going to teach you chishak. It's chi means all purpose. Shakpa means confession. And it's a very short prayer of confession that the monks do every 2 weeks. And it just goes like this, you know. I screw up all the time. I can't even remember all the times I screwed up. I hurt people all the time. All day long, I disappoint people. I judge other people. I hurt other people, you know, with my unstoppable mouth. And whatever I messed up today, I confess, you know. Instead of one by one counting them, you just say, all the mess ups I did today, I confess. That's called chishak, okay? It's a beautiful custom, very efficient. Chishak dabu tun. Tun means recite it. You can recite the chishak. After you do the 35 Buddhist names, okay? And the 8 extra Buddhist names, 7 plus 1. And here's the chishak from the Dzogchen. Dzogchen means there's a separate prayer, a book, a small prayer book called Dzogchen. All 6 of the preparations for meditation are in that short ritual. And it's a custom in our lineage to recite that, to sing that book before you do a meditation. He doesn't give the book. He refers to it, but he doesn't give it. So I got a copy. It's a very messed up copy, tattered copy. It's my copy that I took notes on in 04 or something. But it's all yellow and the notes are messed up all over. It's all messed up with notes. And I asked, who's doing that? Ningbo, is it? And somebody else. Ning. So they are retyping it in Tibetan. And if they ever finish, I will teach it to you. And I think it would be wonderful to sing it together in English, okay? So it's a beautiful little ceremony. It takes like 10 minutes. And it's really beautiful poetry. It's like the Psalms or something. And I'll teach it to you. The deal is you finish typing it, and I'll teach it to you, okay? And I suggest by the next time we meet, which is in August or something. Is it August? Yeah. Okay. In the meantime, he quotes one verse from that work now. So you get one verse for free, even without finishing the typing. Dechak she dang she sok shung tar juk ching. You can recite now, at this point in your preparation for your meditation, one verse from that Dzogchen, from the book of the song that you do before meditation. And it's a beautiful, maybe we could set it to music sometime, like Spanish music or something. But it would be very nice. We had a student who set part of it to music in Ireland, and it was very beautiful. But I think we should do some Spanish music for it. It would be nice to do it that way. It should be sung. They can translate it in half an hour. Kelsang, the name of that book, by the way, is Kelsang Dingyan. Kelsang means lucky people. In Buddhism, what's lucky? In Buddhism, there's no such thing as lucky. There's no such thing. If things are going right, it's because you were nice to other people. Okay? So Kelsang means lucky people, but it means people who have good karma because they were nice to other people. That's called Kelsang. Din means your throat. Gen means, what do you call those things? A necklace or a choker. Okay, choker sounds kind of negative. I don't know. It's true though. I like those pearl ones. But it means a necklace for people who have enough good karma. Okay, why is it called a necklace? Because this song is your necklace. It's coming out of your throat. So the song's name is a necklace for people with good karma who get to sing it. You see what I mean? And then it's kind of like you have this necklace coming out of your throat. Okay, Kelsang Dingyan. Here it is. Here's the verse. And then maybe we'll take a break, okay? Because I know it's been a long day. Some of us have had a very long weekend. It was so happy that it was exhausting. Does that make sense? Yeah. It was totally draining, right? Duchak shedanti mu wangki ni ludang natan deshen yiki kyang digpa daki gipa chi chi pa deda tamzi daki so so sharp. Okay. Rinpoche made us memorize that song before he would teach us the higher teachings, secret teachings. We had to memorize the whole song. Duchak means I want things and I hurt other people to get them. Shedang means I want to get away from certain things and I hurt other people to get away. Timug means I don't understand how stuff works, okay? Otherwise you wouldn't hurt anybody, right? You lie to somebody to get something doesn't work, okay? Karmically, when you lie, it causes someone else to lie to you a week later. If someone believes your lie and gives you what you wanted, that's because you told the truth last week. So lying is not immoral. It's just dysfunctional. It doesn't work. You might as well stop lying because it doesn't work anyway. And it just makes bad karma, okay? So, but we don't understand that. So we have wrong kinds of liking things where we hurt people to get them. We have wrong ways of not liking things where we hurt people to get away from things. And then we have the basic misunderstanding that underlies those other two, okay? And wangki ni because means controlled by those emotions. I committed bad karma in my body, right? I hurt people physically. In my speech, I said bad things to other people. And mentally, I got irritated at people, okay? So, is it bad karma if you get irritated at your partner, but you keep your mouth shut and you don't whack them? It's still bad karma, okay? In fact, it's more powerful than saying something to them or whacking them, okay? To think this person is a real idiot is more bad karma than saying it, okay? Which is bad luck for us, okay? Especially me. I'm good at not saying it, but I'm not so good at not thinking it. Okay. Yiki kyang, digpa daki chipa chichip, daki gipa chichipa. Any times I hurt other people, any mistakes I've made, deda tamje daki soso shak. I admit them openly. The big thing about cleaning your bad karma is to be willing to tell other people you have it. Okay, that's a big deal. It doesn't have to be a priest. It doesn't even have to be your husband or your wife. You know, tell it to anybody. You know, stop somebody at the gas station and say, "Can I just tell you what I did yesterday? I got to get it off my chest." You know, we say if the person understands it, the karma is wiped. Okay, the karma is cleaned. Okay, so try to tell somebody, you know. You know, try. Somebody asked me, can I tell my dog? The scripture says it's more powerful if the other person understands what you're saying. I think a dog can feel what you want, they feel that you feel bad and you want something, maybe you get some credit. Probably a lot. I'm guessing a lot if the dog really loves you. They can feel it, right? But tell somebody, anybody, you know, oh, I had an abortion in college. I tell people that. I did. I was involved. I didn't know what I was doing. I was not taught properly in when I was growing up. And then it feels good to me to tell people because it's off of me, you know. It's like, okay, I messed up. And it's better than hiding it. When you hide stuff, then it festers. Karma festers. It's better just to be honest about who you are and not to pretend you're better than who you are. It's more comfortable for everybody, you know. And then we're all just who we are. And that's just easier for everybody. There's another extreme, which is people run around and tell you everything about their personal life. And that, you know, that's also irritating. So, I mean, don't do that to people. Tell them shortly, sweetly, I messed up. I'm working on it. Thanks for listening. Would you like a donut? You know, you know, I mean, don't go into this sob story about your life, which is also just, you know, irritating to other people. You know, be honest, open, be who you are. It's a lot easier. And you feel a lot happier. Okay, don't pretend to be someone you're not. We're almost done. One more sentence, okay? And then we'll be on to the next part of the meditation warm-up, which is appreciating yourself, which is the theme of our course. And it's what we're going to spend the most time on. You know, how to learn to appreciate yourself, which is one of the biggest karmas there is, okay? One of the biggest good karmas in the whole world is to appreciate yourself, okay? And we're going to get into that. That's going to be the big deal of the next few days, okay? He's going to teach us how to appreciate ourselves. And you just change, your whole life changes. If you learn that little meditation practice about appreciating yourself, your whole life changes and you become a different person and a happier person, okay, and a better person, okay? But we got to finish the confession part. We got one more sentence. Then we'll take a break, okay? Deyang gyu tuk sum dang go lunga yi sum dang ngo mi gewa soso shapashe dom sum soso lukta shakpa dunyan. This little tiny verse from the song, the pre-meditation song, it has three sets of three in it. And the author wants you to be aware of that. He wants you to think about three sets of three that are in that little tiny prayer of confession. Here's the first set of three. Tuk sum. Tuk sum. Say tuk sum. Tuk sum. What's tuk sum? The three tuk. The three animals in the middle of the wheel, what are they? The three poisons, okay? The three poisons, okay? These are three poisons inside the mind. What was it? I had a friend, John Bentham, Xia Liang's husband in Oslo. He got bit by a spider before we got there, bit him in the chest, and it spread, the poison spread. And he had to go to a hospital and they had to do surgery to get the poison out of his chest. And that's the meaning of poison, okay? These three attitudes are poisonous to your mind. They spread to your mind. They spread to the bloodstream of your thoughts. And they poison them. They poison your thoughts. What are they? I'll say them again. Durchak? To want things and be willing to hurt other people to get them, which is just stupid, because when you hurt other people, you don't get things. Got it? We can call it stupid liking. Is it wrong to like things in Buddhism? No. Do you want to go to heaven? Yes. Do you like to go to heaven? Yes. Would you like to help everybody? Yes. Would you like to become a Buddha so you could save the world? Yes. Is liking wrong? No. Is it wrong to like a pizza? No. Okay? You see these paintings of heaven and there's pizzas everywhere. And it's not like you go to heaven and they say, we don't allow deliveries here. You know? It's so dumb to think like that. Oh, I shouldn't like ice cream. I'm a bad person. I'm attached to ice cream. That's just bull hockey. Okay? Ice cream is good. And you should have a little bit in a wise way when you feel like some, and you should enjoy it. And only a spiritual person truly enjoys things. Okay? You should enjoy things. But you shouldn't be willing to hurt other people to get them, because then you won't get them. Okay? That's all. If you like them, you should get them, and you shouldn't do things that prevent you from getting them. Got it? Intelligent liking is wonderful. How do you get pizza, for example? You buy pizza for everybody at the teaching and you hand it out, and then you'll have pizzas for like 10 years. You know? That's intelligent pizza enjoyment. Okay? No, really, you know, and it's also fun for everybody. I'm not suggesting, okay? Maybe I am. Okay, so the three poisons are liking things and being willing to hurt people to get them, because then you won't get them. And disliking things, trying to get away from them by hurting other people, you know. Somebody at work criticizes me, so I'm going to tell the boss about all the mistakes they make. You know, the karma of telling the boss about all the mistakes they make will make people criticize you more. It's just stupid. If you don't like them, be nice to them, and the karma will change and they'll go away. That's the right way to dislike somebody. Is it wrong to dislike an irritating person? No. You should get rid of them. What's the best way to get rid of them? Be nice to them. Duh. Okay, number two. Number three is just thinking right. Right think? Right thinking? Good thinking. If I want something, I should give it to someone else. If I don't want something, I should stop doing it myself. Okay? That's right thinking. The opposite of that is dumb thinking. And that's called timug in Tibetan. So the three poisons, those are the three poisons of the mind. Why are they called poisons? Like John Bentham's chest, when you get bit by them, it spreads throughout your mind and it poisons your mind for a few days. Okay? If you get really angry at somebody, or you like someone's girlfriend and you do something to hurt their relationship, that's a poison in your mind and it will make you unhappy. Okay? Like that. Go lu na yi sum. So we have three sets of three, right? First three are the three poisons. Second three are the three doors of expression. How do you express yourself? Body, speech, and mind. You do stuff with your hands and arms, okay? Or you say things, or you think things. These are the three ways to make karma. These are the only three ways to make karma. Ngo mi gewa. The essence of all these things is non-virtue, right? Wrong, okay? What do you call it? Right and wrong. In English language, we say right and wrong. When in Spanish? I don't know. Bueno y malo. But does it mean morally? Yeah, also. Right and wrong. Good things to do and bad things to do. Then in Tibetan, it's very weird. When you say bueno y malo, it means anything which hurts you is malo. And anything which helps you is bueno. What's the test of a thing being morally correct? Anything which will come back to you as happiness is morally good. Anything which will come back to you as pain is morally wrong. And that's the difference between right and wrong in Buddhism. It's very interesting, okay? So what he says here is, bad deeds' essence is wrong. Why? It hurts you. Okay? And that makes it morally wrong. Okay? Sosa shak shepa domsum. Then at the end of this verse it says, I confess one by one everything I've done. One by one, to a well-trained Buddhist means one by one of the three sets of vows. Okay, so Buddhist morality has three levels. At the foundational level, we try not to hurt other people. That's called pratimoksha, right? These are pratimoksha morality. All the monks' vows, for example, are negative. Don't kill. Don't steal. Don't lie. You see? 253 don'ts. Okay? We gave her 364 don'ts today. That's what took 4 hours. The second set of vows is bodhisattva vows. And those are commitments to help other people. So the first set of morality is don't hurt other people. The second set of morality is if you get a chance, help somebody. Do something nice for somebody. That's bodhisattva morality. And then we have secret morality, which is very cool. Secret morality means to make a commitment to believe that there are angels in your midst. Okay? The highest level of Buddhist morality is to make a commitment to try to see angels around you, to recognize the sneaky angels who are sitting right next to you in the class. Okay? And they will irritate you to test you and make you better. Okay? But they are angels. Okay. The highest level of Buddhist morality is to make a commitment to try to see miracles happening around you. Okay? Those are the three levels of Buddhist morality. And that's the third set of three. So if you had a homework, is Nicole around? Vigna? Where are you? There she is. Do you have extra homeworks for people tonight? It'd be a shame to send them home without a homework. We have some is not enough. Figure out how to get some more by the end of the, by 9:30, okay? On your homework, it might say, what are the three sets of three, okay? Why do I give you homework? I started it 20 years ago. I started giving people homework because nobody remembered anything, okay? And then, you know, it's your job to pass this on to the next generation. You are the second generation. I'm the first generation. Then we got kids here. They're irritating little mat rats, mosquitoes in our midst. And somebody's got to teach them. And you're not going to sit them down and say, Geshe-la said something about three threes, but I don't remember what they were. Good luck, man. You know, it's not good. I got it straight from my lama. I worked hard. I sweated. I learned it, right? Now you have to sweat, and I get to relax, okay? So I'm giving you homework. You should do it, you know? I don't care how you feel about homework. Even if you grew up hating homework, now you're grown up, right? You realize that it's going to make you remember the stuff. And then when your children need some help, they're depressed or they're having a hard time, you can say, oh, there's three sets of three. You just have to remember. Okay? So please, for God's sake, do the homework. Sorry. Do your homework. It's a really good habit. Okay? And it's not difficult. And it will make it stick in your brain. And then when you have children, and 20 years later, and you're trying to explain to them how to purify some mistake they made, you've got something to offer them. Okay? And if you don't do the homework, you won't. And also, it'll be lost in the world. Nobody will have it. Okay? For 2,500 years, every generation did their homework. Are you going to be the schmuck who blows it? You know, are you going to cut this lineage off? Are you going to be the ones that they look back and say, they lost the lineage. They broke the lineage in Phoenix, in Mesa, at the Mesa Church. They broke the lineage. You know, I'm not kidding, okay? You think I'm kidding. Okay. Don't break the lineage. It's your job to hold it. I held it. I'm giving it to you. It's off my head. My bald head. Okay. Don't sunki lukta shakti dinyin. Last sentence. Gyundu dikpa chepa nam dekab yiyu to chete shapin nenden che. If you are in the habit of regularly making moral mistakes, I don't know why he's accusing us of that, then as you do the confession, try to bring to mind with clarity what happened. You know, like the whole process. Play back the video in your mind. You know, I was got up late. I didn't have time to make my coffee. I ran to work. I came in. The usual schmuck who sits next to me said something to me. And because I didn't get my coffee, I said something to them. Play the video back in your mind clearly and clean it. Clean it, okay? Get the video out of your mind, okay? He says it's important to be able to picture what you did, okay? And think about those three sets of three, okay? Thankfully, we are done with confession, which is kind of a, I don't know, tiring subject. I think it's more fun to rejoice about the good stuff we did. Last thing before your break. The very short story, okay? The Pope, I forget which Pope, okay? Everybody asked me which Pope. It was one before John Paul. Who was that?
John.
Was it John?
Paul.
It was Paul, I think. Just Paul? Peter? Anyway, there was a Pope before John Paul. And he issued a statement from the Vatican. He said, all Catholic churches should invite someone from other religion to come and give a talk. And it was a wonderful thing to do. And so all the Catholic churches were calling us. Can you come be a token Buddhist? You know, can you give a talk at our church? And my Lama was, sure, I'd be honored to come to your church and give a talk. So we went to the local Catholic church, which is a very beautiful cathedral, stone cathedral, and beautiful windows. And my Lama and me and the priest, we walked down the aisle in the middle. I told you this story 100 times, but you get to hear it again. I don't care. We went down there's probably a reason why I have to repeat it. We walked down the middle of the aisle, and my Lama was like poking me like this, and he's like, Mike, make a note. I'm like, okay, I got a pen, rip it. What do you need? We need windows like that. In our temple, they got these better windows than us. They got these pictures in the windows. That's so cool. Let's make a Tara window. Let's make a Buddha window. This is a good idea. Colored windows. You know, I said, I got it. I got it, Rinpoche. And he's like, what's that? The priest, he's like, what's that little room over there? What do you use that little room for? Because there was a priest going in the room on one side, and there was a nice looking lady going in on the other side. Then my Lama's like, to the priest, you know, not to me. He's like, what's that room? What are they doing in there? He says, don't worry, don't worry. There's a wall between them. And there's a little window. And the lady is telling the priest the bad thing she did last week. And then he says, well, what happens then? Then the priest tells her to do, what do you call it? Hail Mary. You have to do 25 Hail Marys or 21 or 53. Or he gives her an assignment to clear the karma. And Rinpoche goes to me, what's Hail Mary mean? I said, it's a mantra, Rinpoche. It's like, Om Mani Padme Hum. And he's like, that's cool. He told the priest, that's cool. You guys are smart. That's the best thing to do. When you made a mistake, say a bunch of mantras. Good idea. Then he goes, he's got his arm around the priest. You know, he's like, where's the other room on the other side of the church? And the priest is like, what other room? And Rinpoche, my Lama's like, this old Tibetan Lama's like, you know the room where the priest comes in and the pretty lady comes in. And the priest is like, why do we need two of them? And he says, no, the room where the lady comes in and tells the priest all the good stuff she's doing last week. You know, where's that room? And then the priest is like, that's a good idea. You know, maybe we get one. Maybe we put one in the church, you know. And in Buddhism, you have to give equal time to thinking about the mistakes you made and thinking about the good stuff you're doing, okay? Because that makes the karma stronger. We are required to do both in Buddhism. You have to tell all the bad stuff you did, and then you have to tell all the good stuff you did. we are required to do both. Equal time. Equal time. So now we're going to move on to that, okay? We're going to create the other room in the church. Take a break. Any announcements do I have to make? Oh, yeah. Okay. Yes. Two things, okay? Every year we send a group of our younger people to the Tibetan monastery to study for free. We pay for the airplane. We pay the monastery, the food and all that. And they go for like a month. And it's awesome. You know, you show an American young person into a Tibetan monastery with 3,000 monks there, one of the largest in the world. And it's just awesome. It's a life-changing experience. And we send them for free. We raise the money for their airfares by selling cookies, which are not healthy and which will make you sleep during the second half of this talk. And what I'm asking is, pay $10 for your cookie or pay $20 for your cookie, because then I can get them out of my hair for a month. No, I mean, they can have a big cultural experience, okay? This year, we're planning to send a big group of students from Mexico because we think it would be cool, and they want to go. So we need to probably raise a little extra this year because there's so many cool Mexican Dharma students. So we have to eat more cookies and buy more cookies. Okay, so please do. You know, you can buy them and throw them out if you're a bodhisattva. Okay. We have a birthday. There's a small mosquito in the audience who's this year, he's 10 yesterday. He's one of the nicest young men I have ever met, although I call him Mosquito. I really like him. And he and his brother are absolutely cool. And his name is Connor. And we're going to sing a song for him, give him a cake. You ready? Okay, Venerable Phil, you ready? One, two, three. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Connor. Happy birthday to you. Woohoo! Tomorrow we'll bring a Tsongkhapa book and we'll do a mo, okay? We'll tell his future, okay? Can someone bring? Christini, you got one? Rob's got one, okay. Then please eat as many cookies as you can. Overpay for them. And I'll be sitting here in the front on a chair. If you want to come say hi, if you don't know me and you want to talk to me and say hi, you're very welcome, okay? I like to meet people, okay? Bag sale is through those doors. The bathroom's back there, straight back. See you in 15 minutes, okay? 8:50. I might push the wrong thing, though. Yeah. Okay, we're on class number two. Which was okay. We were supposed to start that by tonight. We're kind of on schedule. How many classes have we had? Oh, this is the fourth class. Yeah, we were supposed to start two last night. We're a little bit behind. Okay. I love this part, okay? This is the coolest part. How many times I will say that, I don't know. But I think it's the coolest part. It's the happiest part of the whole book. And that's the theme of this course, which is appreciating yourself, learning to appreciate yourself. And it's difficult to appreciate yourself and other people. So it's a Buddhist art to learn how to appreciate yourself and other people. We don't know how to appreciate ourselves. We have to learn how to appreciate ourselves. So we're about to embark on a very pleasant journey. A practice to learn how to appreciate yourself and other people. So I think it's really beautiful. And it's just joyful. It's very nice to... You're lucky to be here for this part. And then when we get to the hell realms and stuff, you can just... tell me you're busy or something. So here we go. Shipa Jesu Yirangwin Yen Lakni. The fourth preparation for a meditation of the seven is to learn to appreciate yourself and other people. Okay? It's the other room in the church. Okay? Now he says a very controversial thing, and I would like to have your opinion on it. Okay? I would like to throw it open for discussion. Here's the question. Do we have another microphone? No, not. Maybe tomorrow. I don't know. Do you have a wireless? No? Okay, tomorrow. Let's do it for tomorrow. Okay. You guys will just have to yell. Here's the statement. I'm wondering what you guys think about it. Here we go. Shipa Jesu Yi Rang Di Chanju Sembe Nyamlen Nyimbe. You can follow the Tibetan, right? Are we doing okay up there? Show them where we are. There we are, right there. Yirang di chaju sembe nyamlen yimbe. Okay, the first line there. Down one line. There you go. Yirang means learning to appreciate yourself and other people. Chanju semba means bodhisattva. Nyamlen means a practice. Yin means it is. Therefore, pe means therefore. Rang re means us guys. Lo means mine. Chung se babka. Se babka. Babka. Babka is an idiom and it's difficult to explain in English, okay? It means we don't get it. Bab means to fall. Ka means difficult. But it means when we hear about this practice, we're like, huh? It means it doesn't fit our... Rinpoche used to say it doesn't fit our mind. Our mind is like this, and the practice is like this, and it babka. It doesn't quite... We can't get it. It doesn't fit in our head. Okay? Babka. Why? Because it's a chanju sembe nyamlen. It's a bodhisattva practice. So for us normal people, we have trouble getting it. I would like to ask people if they have ideas why, okay? Why does a bodhisattva understand how to appreciate themselves and it's hard? Why is this considered a practice for bodhisattvas and not for us? He says you have to understand emptiness. No, we'll entertain all opinions. Rebecca. So if you are always serving others, you appreciate yourself more?
Yeah.
And other people?
Yeah.
Okay. They're more into...
Like they're always doing...
They have more to appreciate about themselves. Okay. Nick?
Because they recognize that they are one of the sentient beings to whom they have to serve.
Oh, that's interesting.
And also because they recognize...
Wait, let me repeat that. So bodhisattva understands that if their job is to serve the whole world, they are also one of the people that they're serving. Okay. Then, second?
Because also the idea is that they have to get themselves to a high state because that would be the best way that they can help others. So they have to appreciate the others.
Of other people or themselves? Okay. So I think Nick's saying that a bodhisattva is intent on reaching a high level so that they can help other people more effectively. So therefore, they have to learn to appreciate themselves more. Alejandro.
It's like an addition to what he said. You include yourself in... You want happiness for everyone, including you. And the other thing is that since everyone is a projection from how you treat others, of course... The basis of the projector also has to be working fine. Otherwise, if you don't see yourself in a nice way, you will project defective other beings.
Okay, things are coming from me as if I were a movie projector. And if the projector itself is defective, then the movie is going to be defective. So I should appreciate myself more, and that will make me a better projector. Cool. Berta? I want to repeat the question. Why is appreciating yourself something that normal people have trouble with and bodhisattvas are good at it?
Well, because...
Whoa, far out. Okay, Johnny, I'll cut the echo.
If you're going to teach others...
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
You have to appreciate what you know in order to teach it.
Otherwise, how can you be sure to teach correctly?
Good. If what you're teaching, if you're a bodhisattva, if you're supposed to help others, you're supposed to teach others, and if you learn things properly, then you can appreciate yourself. Because if you didn't learn them properly, you couldn't be a bodhisattva, and then there's nothing to appreciate. Okay, good. Yeah.
If your action or thought is not genuine and authentic, then your view of yourself isn't genuine and authentic, and then therefore it would negate all of it.
Yeah, good. If you can't be authentic about your whole life, you're not going to be authentic about yourself. And if you can't be authentic about yourself, you can't help people either. Okay. Anyone else? The question again is, why do bodhisattvas understand appreciating themselves and normal people don't?
I think the reason normal people don't is because many still see the separation between themselves and others.
Yeah.
So it's tough to imagine appreciating yourself. They get so focused on appreciating others and forget to include themselves in that.
Yeah, I like it. Okay. So attempting to appreciate others and refusing to appreciate yourself is admitting that you think others and yourself are separate, which bodhisattvas don't fall into. I like that, and that's pretty cool. I think there was one more up here. Aisha, maybe.
Just because bodhisattvas understand how karma works,
yeah,
and they know that if they appreciate their virtues, they will get bigger, and they will be able to serve more people.
Yeah, okay.
Like where mind goes, prana goes, so...
Bodhisattvas want to make good karma, because good karma will make them better helpers of other people. And the best way to make powerful good karma, the best way to make karma grow faster is to be happy about it. Okay. Rick has one. Rick Blue has one. Rick there.
I got a big mouth.
Okay.
Maybe in a sense it's because they know that it worked. Because they had to be at the stage where they, you know, it's like in the airplanes where they say, put the mask on first so you can help others.
Yeah, good.
We say it, we're not sure we believe it. They've done it. They know that it works. So therefore, you know, they realize the power of, you have to make yourself a fit vessel to be able to help other people.
Okay.
So you have to be able to rejoice in it to get the karma to do it.
Good. Okay. To help others, you have to be good yourself, which involves appreciating. If you believe that you are good, you appreciate yourself automatically. And you can't help others unless you've helped yourself first. Jane had one, I think.
If bodhisattvas can see God in everyone, they can see it in themselves, and we can't see that. We don't see the God in everyone and in ourselves.
Good, yeah. In secret Buddhism, we are like required as a practice to try to see the divine in everybody. And a bodhisattva would also see it therefore in themselves. And that goes back, I think, to not dividing yourself from other people, right? One more here, Anatole.
I think that bodhisattvas want a particular result in the end, which is for everyone to, for them to get enlightened and for everyone to reach enlightenment. So I would imagine that the cause would resemble the result.
You gotta tell me more.
Well, the result is for everyone to get enlightened. So I think the cause would resemble the result in the sense that you would, even before you reach the result, you would try to like imagine what the result would be like, so you would be happy about yourself. And you, like in enlightenment, you're happy about yourself. You rejoice in yourself and you rejoice in the happiness of others. So if that's the result you're looking for, then you would use the result as the cause.
Yeah, they call it artificial, right? You would pretend, you would try to see the good in everybody so that later you will see the good in everybody.
Yeah.
Something like that. That's cool. Erin has one.
I was thinking, maybe it's what Daniel was saying because they understand emptiness, but I was thinking if your thoughts...
Can you say more about that, Daniel? You want to go for it? Suppose I'm in this room, suppose I'm at my first talk, and this guy named Daniel says, you should appreciate yourself more if you understand emptiness. Then I'm wondering, what do you mean? If I'm a new person here...
I think I was referring more to the emptiness of ourselves and the way that we see ourselves is going to, in the moment. Is
say more. Explain more. Like the pen or something?
Okay, well, because the way we see ourselves is just as empty as this pin, then we'd have to plant the seeds to see ourselves as a being who can help others in the future. And the only way we're going to be able to do that is by appreciating ourselves. Mm-hmm. And since really the power to help others is coming from the seeds that we plant and the way that we view ourselves, rejoicing in our own actions is probably the fastest way to get to the point where you'd actually be able to believe that you can help other beings. And so it's kind of like the emptiness of ourselves. And by planting the seeds of rejoicing, you really do get to a point where you can actually see yourself helping other beings much quicker.
Cool. Okay, that's better. Erin, sorry.
I was just thinking along those lines that if your thoughts are only a seed ripening, then in order to have good thoughts about other people, you have to constantly be having good thoughts about yourself as well. So kind of like Ben was talking about when he was talking yesterday, like if you're thinking negatively about yourself, that's going to ripen into perhaps you thinking negatively about another person or acting negatively. So it's just going to be constantly reflected back and forth. So the only way to continue having good thoughts about anyone is to have good thoughts about yourself. And that's the highest service.
Okay. I don't know. Bonnie has one back in the back.
Oh,
it's okay. Use a mic. It's easier on our... it's good. Go ahead.
So, talking about emptiness, I thought Rebecca's answer was great. And then when Daniel was speaking more, I thought, if we understand emptiness and then we have this precious human rebirth, and if we have the goodness to actually be a bodhisattva, we have done a lot to be appreciative of. So if we're in this room, then we have a reason to feel pretty good about who we are.
Okay, cool. Yeah, that's coming. A lot of your thoughts are going to come. So let's go a little bit more. We have like 10 more minutes or something. A lot of what you said is in here, okay? So look for it, okay? It's nice. Di Legpo Chungna, if you learn to appreciate yourself and others, well, Tsok Sokpa Shikla, Dile Lak Me. There is no way to collect good karma more powerfully than appreciating yourself and other people. There's no other way to collect good karma faster and more powerful than that. This is the most powerful, okay? Then he gives an example, okay? Oh, my computer went again to... Stop... go back. Here we are. Okay, he tells a story. Ngar, in ancient times, Ulpo Depa, there was a beggar named Depa in Tibetan. In Sanskrit, it's Surata. Okay, his name was Surata. And, he lived in a certain kingdom. The king of that kingdom was called Prasenajit. Okay, so the king was named Prasenajit, which in Tibetan is Selgyal. And that king was living in the time of the Buddha. And so that king was a very... there were things called Dharma kings. Like they were the best meditators and the best yoga practitioners, and they happened to be the king also. which was common in those times. Then he did Nyankor to the Buddha and his disciples who were passing through his land. Meaning, I do it to my teacher the other day, okay? We were in Paris. I love to brag about being in Paris. We were giving two programs in Paris, and my friends surprised me. They said, "We have a surprise for you," you know, like Rick and Bonnie and Mercedes and Kevin. And they said, "You got to get up early, Geshe Michael, and walk with us to the Notre Dame Cathedral, and then something's going to happen." You know, so I'm like, okay. I thought they were going to take me on one of those stupid boats and I get my bald head fried all day. And anyway, they took me to the market, and it's a farmer's market, and we had a big... then we met this group of people that we never met before, and it's a cooking class. And first they take you to the open market, and they pick out the freshest things of everything, and then they decide what to make for the cooking class. And then they take you to the cooking class, right? And I was excited because if I learned to make a good French meal, and we spent, how many hours was it? 4 or 5 hours? It was cool. If I learned to make a full-fledged French meal from beginning to end, all of the courses, I can make it for my lama. I can serve it to my lama. That's Nyankor. Nyankor means treating your lama, okay? Like treating your lama. By the way, I did it. I'll show you the photo, okay? It came out better than Paris. But I did the whole thing. I got confused on some things, you know, because I didn't take that good notes, you know. So I just threw it kind of in together, and it was nouveau style. And but that's Nyankor. Nyankor means treating your lama. So this king, Prasenajit, went to treat the Buddha and his close followers. And he, you know, he probably made a duck dinner for them or something. Okay. With his own hands, okay, which was the ancient custom. The king didn't pay, what's that thing? It's a charity, the big charity that covers all the other charities. United Way. He didn't write a check to United Way that they should treat the Buddha. He went and did it with his own hands. This is the old style of government. High government officials in India would take the day off and go cook for the Buddha themselves. They would be in the kitchen washing the dishes and stuff. So he did a good Nyankor, this king. And there was a beggar watching the whole thing going on, you know. And he was like, damn, we got a cool king in our country, you know. Our king is number one, you know. He's got the spiritual intelligence to treat the Buddha and cook the dinner himself, okay? Who got more karma? The beggar, okay? Because he was actively thinking how cool the whole time, okay? Just by his mind, how he felt about the king, he was like, damn, we got a great king. We got the best king. And the king is thinking like, you know, I got to get back to the palace, you know, let me just get this done. Okay? Then the beggar got more good karma than the king, okay? Who cooked the food with his own hands, all right? Of course I went and looked up the story. What was that? I'll tell you the story, okay? I went and looked up the story. Because sometimes they don't tell all the details of the story, and they're sexier than the little ones. So this is from Kyutsang Lama Losan Jamyang Munlam. Kyutsang is a line of reincarnated lamas like the Dalai Lamas, but it's from our monastery, okay? The best monastery, Serame. We have all the coolest reincarnated lamas. So Shenyang Gyalpo Seljo, he tells the whole story. The story is that the king wanted to check out the Buddha. He offered to cook, but the motive was he wanted to see if this guy's for real or not. Dukzu, to Chen Dambana, Upa Depe Selgyal Ki Getsa La Jisi Rang Cher Cher Gombe Gyalpo Le Kyang Upa De Gawa Chewa Gyurte. In this version, it says the beggar was more turned on than the king was. And that's why he got more good karma. He was more excited about it than the king was. So he got more good karma. Chomden Deki Yun Shed Zepa Naang. And while the Buddha was eating dinner, he said, I just want to thank the person, you know, who really made my day today. And the king is like, you know, and then he said, the beggar, Surata. And the king is like, what? What beggar? And Buddha's like, Surata is so cool. You know, the beggar is so cool. And the king is like, hey, I'm cool too, you know. And that's the whole story. Okay, it was very funny. Selgyal got lomsem. What's lomsem? We have a tantric vow against Nelnjar Par Lom. Depa Mela Damchu Dun. Lomba means delusions of grandeur. And there's a vow against delusions of grandeur. I'm such a great practitioner. Yeah, and you got irritated at the gas station 15 minutes ago with some little guy. You know? Okay. He got lomsem, who? The king. Danchepe Gewale. The beggar didn't have any delusions about himself. Okay, he wasn't thinking, I'm a really good beggar because I have the spiritual intelligence to be happy about the king. You know, he wasn't conceited about his own goodness, and the king was. Okay, from the bottom of his heart, he was enjoying the king. So the good karma came from enjoying. He was enjoying the dinner more than the king. Okay. The most powerful way to make good karma is to enjoy the good stuff you're doing and the good stuff other people are doing. Okay? Isn't that weird? I mean, it implies that the highest spiritual good comes from enjoying yourself, having fun, right? Who was talking about fun? Kendra. Yeah, we had a retreat and trying to talk us into fun for an hour. You know, it means that having fun is better karma than all these, you know, getting nailed onto something and, you know, it's cool. It's very interesting that enjoying other people's goodness is the highest goodness. Okay, because it's cheap and it's easy. Okay, you don't have to, you know, anyway. Okay, Jetson Kape, the founder of our personal, of our lineage, the teacher of the first Dalai Lama, said, Bepa Chungu Lapchen Sokdu La, if you want to make a hell of a lot of good karma without any big effort, he didn't say heck, okay. Gela Jesa Yurang Choktu Sum, there is no higher practice than to enjoy yourself. Okay, there is no higher practice than to enjoy yourself. She Sumbatar. Of course, I went and got the whole poem, okay? There's a longer poem, and I went and got, I wanted you to hear the whole poem, okay? This is from a famous work by Jetsun Kapa called Tokcho. Tokcho means success story, spiritual success story. Avadana in Sanskrit. Rinpoche means precious. Dun Lekma means high hopes for the world. Jetsun Kapa wrote a poem called High Hopes for the World. The story of my life. Okay? That would be nice to write a book called The Story of My Life, High Hopes for the World. Jay Tamche Kemi Dokchi, the Beba Chungun Lapchen Sokyu Dula. If you want to make a lot of good karma without much effort, and you want lap chen, say lap chen. Lub means a wave, a tsunami, Mavericks, Jaws, Maui, North Shore wave, okay? A big wave, like a powerful wave, is called Lubchen. But in Tibetan, big wave means effective, small expense, big result, okay? Small work, big result. When I was learning this word, I asked my Lama, Ken Rinpoche, I had a human dictionary for 25 years. I didn't own a dictionary. I just went upstairs with a cup of tea and bribed him. You know, so I say, Rinpoche, here's a cup of tea. What's Lubchen mean? You know, and he'd be, oh, Lubchen. Lubchen is like, he says, what are those little curved knives that you use to cut the crops? A sickle, right? Those that you use to cut corn, and this little knife, little knife like this big curved, like the communist has on there. What do you call it? Os. Like in the communist flag, they have this. Yeah, so os. Rinpoche says, oses are not Lubchen. Then he says, you know those big machines that kill 48 rabbits every 5 feet and they cut like half a field in 5 minutes? That's Lubchen compared to a os. Okay, got it? That's the difference. Big wave means, what do you call that in English? But what do you call it compared to a sickle? More, it's much more, it's exponentially more powerful. Who said that? That was nice. Yeah, exponentially more powerful. Okay. What are we talking about here, which is exponentially more powerful? Just being, enjoying other people's good stuff. Yesterday we heard, last 2 days we heard these extraordinary people talk. You know, from Guadalajara and from that little patch of desert. And it was so cool. I mean, each talk was better than the last one, you know. If you had a vote, it would have been a big headache. They were all extraordinary. They were all like off the charts, you know. And then I was just sitting there like, damn, you know, this is cool. And then that's Lubchen, to sit there and listen to these people talk and say, cool, cool. That's Lubchen. That's the fastest way to make good karma. And I'm just sitting on my butt. They're doing the work. You know, they're going to all these places in Guadalajara taking care of people. I'm just sitting there saying, cool, I get as much karma. This is a good deal. Okay. Gela Jeyurang Choktusung. That's the highest form of goodness, is to just enjoy good people. Kepa Rangi Ngunche Gewala. And especially to appreciate yourself, okay, is even more powerful than to appreciate others. He says that. See, it's additional stuff. Lomsem Trelwa, but don't get conceited. You know, don't. The purpose is not pride. The purpose is enjoyment. Pride wants an exclusivity contract. I should be the best and only do-gooder. Everyone should tell me I'm the best do-gooder. You know, then it gets into pride and conceit. He says, but I'm not talking about pride or conceit. It's healthy enjoyment of your own good deeds. It's most powerful. Tell me, gawa cherkena, go for it. Be turned on about yourself, okay? In a healthy way. Am I Mother Teresa? No. Do I have her capacity? No. Did I do some good stuff this weekend? Yes. Was it cool? Yes. You know? Should I be happy? Yes. You know? Is that a good thing to do? It's the best thing to do. Okay? Gawa chicken. Munche gewa kontu pelo she means you will get interest on your good karma. Okay? You're piling up interest on your good karma. How? Being happy about what you did yesterday. Okay? You get interest. Like a credit card interest. Extra. Okay? Galway Sumbe Dunde Dubchir Dang, Gopa Shaya Mangdu Tomina, Semkyu Gawaditar Kina Lek. He says Semkyu. What's that mean? What's Kyu or Kirang mean in you? It means you. Who's he talking to? Sem. His own mind. He's talking to his mind. Oh mind, can you be happy, please? He's like talking to his own mind. Could you just be a little more happy? About what? Yourself. Why? Two reasons. The Buddha said you were supposed to. Okay? You are obeying the Buddhas if you are happy about yourself. Secondly, it triggers a lot of other good stuff in the world. Okay? You're following the Buddha's instructions, and you're triggering a lot of cool stuff in the world. How? If my mind, you can just be a little more happy about us. Okay? About us. Okay? He's talking to himself. Jason Kappa. Cool. Okay, last sentence, then we'll go home. She Sumbatar Lungaki Gulkyumi Gopar. Lungak, what's Lungak mean? Lungak Yi. Body? Speech and thinking, okay? Nunga yi. Gulkyu means this. Watch. You ready? You ready? Watch. Wait, Rebecca has to stop gulkyuing. I'm going to gulkyu. You ready? No, it just means every tiny motion of your body is gulkyu. You know, like, if you do meditate well, you shouldn't be gulkyu. And then the minute you, how do you call that? It's not a single gesture or a single movement of your body. A half inch movement of your body is called gulkyu. Okay, half inch movement of your body, in Tibetan, is called gulkyu. We still don't move a hair. What do we say? Don't
move a muscle.
Move a muscle. Don't budge an inch, something about hair. Anyway, then he says, "Mi gopa, you don't have to. You don't have to. What? You don't have to move an inch. You can sit there in your chair. You can sit there on your couch at home. Gugyu mi gopa. You don't have to lift a finger. How's that? You don't have to lift a finger. Just sit there and be happy about other people." Oh, I saw these guys at Diamond Mountain. They're breaking their... They're having a very difficult retreat. And they're cool. And then suddenly I got half their good karma. You know, it's a good deal. Dalwar Dushin Du Tsopak Du Mepa Dupa Shiyin. You can collect massive amounts of good karma. Laying on your bed at night with your head on the pillow, close your eyes, think about all the cool stuff you saw today, and especially what? All the good stuff you did today. And you've got incredible amounts of good karma. You can't make good karma that much any other way. You can go work in a soup kitchen for a year. You can get more on your pillow. Does that mean you shouldn't go to the soup kitchen? I didn't say that. Okay. Okay, so let's stop there. We'll talk more, okay? We have to go very deep. This is a deep meditation on appreciating yourself because we have trouble doing it. We like to think about our problems and we like to concentrate on what a schmuck I am. And we don't like to think I'm a pretty nice person, okay? But you are. And you have to be trained to think like that, okay? To recognize how good you are, you have to go to training, and we're going to do it. Okay. How about Rob Haggerty? All right, nice Irish boy.
Sange shindu mite uagi Ching la che pa shon Hiram guru ratna mandala kam ne yatayami Ti ke wokan sanam yeshe tsotsok shin sanam yeshe le chume Dhamma kuni toba sho.
Please, do you have some homeworks ready? So that's Nicole. She has homeworks in her hands. I beg you to do one, to take one. I beg you to write it. It's 10 minutes, okay? Because you have to pass this on. You have to get it straight.
Have a good night.